This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Why, yes, it is funny every time. Why do you ask? Why do you ask?
Looking forward to tomorrow. Maybe. If he's on tomorrow.
I suspect he will be. I talked to him last week. He said he would be. Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, and the man who brought into our lexicon.
Well, he didn't do it.
Well, he didn't do it, but his listeners did. His followers did. And I'm okay with it because it makes me laugh quite a bit.
I am just a blonde bimbo cracker.
we're making it worse on ourselves, if we're being honest. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Hour number three of the Rob Brown Show underway. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and
hey,
you.
Rob, look at how many people are watching right now.
Nice. 69 viewers on the stream. Nice. Which you can make it 70 if you want by going to thefanupstate.com, by going to the Fan Upstate's Facebook page, by going to the Fan Upstate's Twitter page, by going to the Fan Upstate's YouTube page, by going to the Rob Brown Show Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch page. Just search the Rob Brown Show and you can join our live stream. You can go behind the scenes, Lonzo, when I have conversations off the air all the time. Sometimes they make it on the air, sometimes they don't. But if you want to be a part of those conversations, if you want to get deep in the armada, go watch our live stream, facebook.com/thefanupstate, The Fan Upstate on Twitter or YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Twitch. I wish I would have pulled the clip now. I did not, and I am mad at myself for it. But Julian Edelman yesterday on their pod told Rob Gronkowski that the 69th overall pick in the National Football League draft belongs to the New England Patriots. And Gronk, after he was done giggling like an absolute schoolgirl, said, "I feel like I have to go make that pick, right?" Gronk said, "I feel like I need to get up there and make that pick." And I've never agreed with Gronk more.
I was hoping I drowned it out so he wouldn't play it again. Didn't work.
I'm never going to not play the Gronk laugh.
I will find a way to sabotage your board just to make that one disappear. That one and the other thing. Oh. Oh. Oh.
So good. So good. Hey, it's your Audio Blitz. The best audio that we found since the last time we did it, which was a long time ago. We got a lot of stuff to get here over the next few minutes as we have the legendary voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, Mark Bonetti, joining us here in about 36 minutes. Also, while I'm on, people joining the show. Coming up at 11:45, yes it is, after we get off the air, which means you'll have to stay tuned to tomorrow, the newest member of the Carolina Panther roster and a former South Carolina Gamecock, Rico Dowdle, is going to join us. Zoe and I will record that interview coming up later on this morning after we get off the air. We will replay that interview for you coming up tomorrow on the radio broadcast. I am one and pretty dadgum excited to have Rico Dowdle join the show. There's a lot we need to talk about. Rico was with the Cowboys last year. The Cowboys decided they need to move on, which tells me one thing and one thing alone. Tells me the Dallas Cowboys are drafting Ashton Jante out of Boise State to come play for them. We'll get to that as we get closer to the draft. But I think they made a big mistake in letting him walk. And then the Panthers took advantage of that by signing Rico Dowdle to come to Charlotte.
You mean Dallas wasn't being selectively aggressive by letting him go?
Selective aggression. We got to talk about that Cena promo too.
Tomorrow.
Oh man, it's gonna be a hard wait to not go off. Because I got to tell you, John Cena picking out one specific kid and calling him toxic was one of the greatest things that's ever happened in wrestling.
Oh, this is probably one of the greatest promos ever uttered by anyone in so all good. Of wrestling in the history of mankind.
One of my favorites of all time.
But wait till tomorrow.
We will. Fight Club tomorrow, 9:20. We talk about all the wrestling, and there's plenty of the wrestling to talk about as we stream now 1 month away from the showcase of the Immortals, WrestleMania. Looking forward to that. Audio Blitz. Here's the best audio we've picked up over the past 24 hours. Tim Duncan was on Richard Jefferson's podcast.
Wait. He still exists?
Not only does he. I am going to say, this is the first I have heard from Tim Duncan in a very long time. Tim Duncan's got big dreads now, but also he's like old, and it's fantastic. Like, he just is out of bleeps to give. So he went on Richard Jefferson's podcast, and Jeffy asked him an interesting question. He answered, and Richard Jefferson said, "How weird can I make this for Tim Duncan?"
Oh no.
Uh-huh.
Oh no.
Uh-huh. What's your favorite karaoke song? Legendary NBA player Tim Duncan, who is definitely still capable of whooping some asses. Baby Got Back. Oh, that's cool. Shout out to your wife. Not just your wife. Called her by her first name. Not shout out to Tim Duncan's wife, Vanessa. Not shout out to Tim Duncan's wife. No. Shout out, Vanessa and Tim Duncan. So I gotta scoot over so I can show you how this works. Dunk was kind of like doing the podcast thing where he's just kind of like looking around answering questions. And Jefferson goes, "Shout out, Vanessa." And Timmy D goes, and "Yeah." Just gave him the look.
Yeah, that's about right.
Just gave him the look. Shout out to your wife, but only as her first name. Spectacular.
And Richard Jefferson already sounds kind of nerdy anyway. He always has.
He's in his like three-piece suit with the vest and everything.
He kind of nerd grumbled.
Yeah.
Like, well,
You know, speaking of wrestling, he turned into Byron Saxton for a minute.
There you go.
He turned into Byron for just a second. I'm a Bill Rafferty guy. You a Bill Rafferty guy? I love Bill Rafferty. Rafferty's a great NFL talker.
Didn't he sing Baker Street?
Not that guy. Different Rafferty. Bill Rafferty has done play-by-play and color for teams. He's done it for networks. He's a good storyteller, which to me is kind of a big deal for being a color guy. And Bill Rafferty's one of them. Well, Bill Rafferty was on the Pardon My Take Barstool podcast and got asked the question by Big Cat and then went on to prove.
Wait, there's a guy named Big Cat?
Yeah, Big Cat from Barstool.
Is that his real name?
I'm assuming that his parents did not name him Big Cat.
Is he a large gentleman?
He is a large gentleman. And he asked the large gentleman question of Bill Rafferty. One of us. One of us.
It's kind of illegal, isn't it? I mean,
to hide a beer in a bush for later?
Yeah.
No.
And
if that's illegal, what in the world is happening to this country? We should all be free to go hide a dozen beers in a bush for later.
I mean, if that was an employee of the bar and he sent them out to do that, that's kind of That's very dangerous. I think legally that's a bad idea, because what if someone underage came along and found that? Then you'd be liable for that. I'm just saying, it's just I know you're having fun, but I'm just thinking of the ramifications of the Utes.
If this is a country where me and the boys can't stake a dozen bushes in a bush for the after party, then I don't know what's happened to America. All right? This is the most one of us story since Siwoo Kim said, I knock out a dozen Red Bulls and a Tylenol PM for the back nine. And Bill Rafferty just elevated himself from legend to even more legend by saying, yeah, my man Jay Wright, former head coach of the Villanova Wildcats and an absolute dude, we were out having a couple of beers. The bar shuts down, so I said, got a surprise for the boys. Why don't you check that bush right over there? He's like the beer fairy. It's the best, because I got to tell you, I can't tell you how many times I walked out of the beer, out of the bar with the boys, and it's like 2:30 in the morning, and you're like, you ready for bed? I'm not ready for bed. I'm kind of ready for the after party to the after party. I wish I had a dozen bush lights right now. Oh, magically, I do. What a guy.
Yeah, don't what listen a guy. To Rob if you are closing down a place and go look around the bushes. Probably might be a red flag for the police. Wondering, okay, why are they out there around the bushes?
Hey, be responsible with your bushes, all right? If you're going to have a bush, be responsible with your bush is all I'm saying. Speaking of that, Rick Pitino is having himself a run right now. St. John's wins the Big East. They're going dancing. Not just going dancing, but like, they're a contender to win the whole damn thing right now.
Win it all. They're going to the Olive Garden.
Ricky P is obviously no stranger to a party, all right? We all know Ricky Pitino likes the party. I got to tell you, the guy's putting up a resume right now that has got many people asking, is he going to go down as one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time? The answer to me is yes, not just because he's got a legendary career that's going to be filled with Final Fours. Hell, he's a threat to go to the Final Four one more time. But when St. John's finished off the Big East championship on St. Patty's Day, and got their ticket was already punched, but got it official that they're going as a conference champ, Rick Pitino sat down with the boys to have a post-game discussion on the court. Said, I'm going to drink a quart of JMO.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot of Irish whiskey.
Okay, all right.
It's a lot of Irish whiskey. Now, I don't think Ricky P is going to go literally sit down and literally drink a quart of JMO. What I am going to say is if a 72-year-old head basketball coach says, I'm going to celebrate with my favorite green bottle on the shelf, that's my kind of guy. That's the guy. I've been saying all year, I've been watching the St. John's documentary. If you haven't been watching Red Storm Rising, it's on YouTube, and it's absolutely spectacular. Rick Pitino has been dropping bite after bite after bite, speech after speech after speech. Rick Pitino's got me, a guy who has absolutely questioned some of the decisions he's made both on and off the court year after year. I've said a couple of times, and I'll say it again now, if I got a young man coming up through the high school ranks, definitely going to play D1 college basketball, I kind of want him playing for Rick Pitino right now. And now it finds out I want my boy playing for Rick Pitino. And then after they go win a conference title, I want to go party with Rick Pitino after it's over. Not in the Italian Olive Garden, but just in general, my man said a quart of JMO to hit the celly. All right, well, we got a theme going, so why not keep going? Hey, Stone Cold Steve Austin. How do you make the perfect margarita? You're good. So, first off, that's a damn good margarita recipe from Stone Cold Steve Austin. As a margarita enthusiast, I grew up on a beach. It's my go-to. I learned how to make a mean margarita. It's very similar to Stone Cold's. There's a couple of things that are a little bit different there. Nailed it on the lime juice. Numero uno problem with restaurants and bar keeps is that they go heavy on the lime juice. That lime juice is what makes that margarita. When you get that margarita and you go, wah, wah, that's sweet. That's the lime juice. I don't want that much lime juice. You want about half as much lime juice as you have liquor in the glass. All right? That's the key to a margarita. But I'm gonna give you two more. One of them is something I believe Stone Cold Steve Austin left out that you need, and that's Cointreau. Got to have Cointreau. Cointreau will elevate your margarita game to a level you didn't know was possible. All right? Gives it just a little citrus. It kind of takes the acidity of the lime down a little bit. It's phenomenal. Cointreau. It's delightful.
All right, here's the thing. So you're disparaging Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No, I'm not. I just said damn good margarita recipe from Stone Cold.
You're saying it wasn't good enough, though.
I'm saying it can be elevated a little bit more. All right, it can be elevated.
He's got one
more
in him. Don't make it be with
you. I know he does. I heard that. I was going to go with that one, but this one jumped off the page at your boy Rob Brown. Again, noted margarita enthusiast. Here's the second thing, and this one I figured out. Not a lot of people go with me on this until you try it. Okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make the Broken Skull margarita. I want you to make it just like Stone Cold said. I want you to put on top of that, Grand Marnier's fine, but you go with like an ounce of Cointreau, all right? Then I want you to hit it with like three splashes of Sprite. Trust me on this. It's going to add just a little bit of crisp to your margarita. Make it a little more daytime refreshing, all right? A little bit more of a sunshiny margarita. Go with the silver tequila. That's the play. Go with the drops of the agave nectar. That's the play. Go with just, I don't even go with a full ounce and a half, just an ounce of lime juice to give it a little sweet. That's the play. A little Cointreau on top, give it a little orange to it. And then just like pop, pop, pop of Sprite in there. I'm telling you, it's going to take it to a new level. All right, when we come back, we now know the Clemson Tigers' first-round game in the NCAA March Madness Championship Tournament. And I'm going to tell you, you could not have gotten a worse draw if you're Clemson. You are on upset alert today. And I'm going to tell you why when we come back. Then Mark Benetti, voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, will join us at 8:40 to break down the Rabbits. Up, they got a game tonight at the Well. We'll break that one down as well as the weekend that was and the weekend upcoming. Final hour of the show belongs to you. Anything you want to get to in the 9 o'clock hour, it's on you. All back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Upstate. Clemson Tigers have their most successful Atlantic Coast Conference basketball season of all time. And their reward for it is that they are placed as the 5 seed in the Midwest bracket. Now, if you'd have told me at the beginning of this year, with the losses that that team took off the roster, that this team would go into the March Madness tournament as a 5 seed, I would have said, that's pretty good. Maybe the patience that y'all showed with old Bradley B, maybe pay it off. I've told you before. When I came up here in February of 2020 to audition and interview for this job, I got told by the now boss man, I'm going to give you two segments that I would like you to do, that I'd like to hear your take on. So the rest of the time, I would like you to just do your show the way that you do your show. But I want to give you two local segments that I would like to hear your breakdown on so I can hear how you kind of vibe with the local teams. And I said, spectacular. One of them was South Carolina moving on from Will Muschamp, who should be the next guy. Should they move? Yada, yada, yada. You remember that conversation. The other one was, is it time for Clemson basketball to move on from Brad Brunell? And can Clemson basketball ever become a true contender in the ACC and in the national championship picture? That was 5 years ago last month that I was asked to do that segment. And when I came up here, the take that I had was, I've seen enough out of Brad Brunell to think he can do it. But I kind of think we're at the point now where it's kind of, as my old man used to say, it's time to or get off the pot, as the expression goes. I said, I don't know. Like, on one hand, I kind of feel like I've seen enough to say, I think the guy can do it. On the flip side, he hasn't done it. And how long do you wait for him to done it before you say, you ain't done it, you gotta go? And here we are 5 years later. Last year, the team went on an Elite Eight run. This year, the team's absolutely got it in them to go on an Elite Eight run once again. 5 years. Brad Brunell's been in charge of that team for a lot longer than that. That conversation's been going on since before I got here. Patience, as they say, is a virtue. And a lot of schools don't have it. And now, maybe more than ever, it's going to be real hard to have patience when you are talking about the head coach of a major Division I program. I'm talking basketball, football, baseball, whatever. Because if you aren't moving forward, you are now screaming backwards. So, here comes this Clemson Tiger team, number 5 seed in the Midwest. Here's the problem. You drew, perhaps, the absolute worst 5-12 matchup you could have asked for in round number 1 against McNeese State. You drew a 5-12 matchup, whereas Michigan got UC San Diego, Oregon got number 12 Liberty, and Memphis got number 12 Colorado State. You got McNeese State. And you go, wait a minute, Rob, the Cowboys are 27-6. Ain't exactly a dominant basketball program. I don't disagree, but you do have a problem here. You have two problems here. Number one, the head coach of McNeese State is a young man by the name of Will Wade. Now, those of you that are college basketball enthusiasts, you know who Will Wade is. Will Wade is a young man that at one point was the head coach of the LSU Tigers. Will Wade was dismissed from the LSU program back in 2022 because they found recruiting infractions, including Will Wade discussing an offer to pay a recruit. It was overheard on an FBI wiretap. Will Wade described the payment as a, and I quote, strong-ass offer, end quote. He was also caught on the wiretap saying, I'll be honest with you, I'm tired of dealing with the thing, like I'm just sick of dealing with the, like, this should not be that complicated. The very next day, LSU announced he was indefinitely suspended amongst an FBI probe. That probe found some more stuff later on. He was dismissed. Now, yes, Will Wade broke the rules that were the rules. Here's the thing. The year before that, Will Wade had taken the 2021 LSU Tigers, who before he got there were bad at basketball, to the championship game of the SEC tournament. He earned them an 8 seed in that tournament. He was terminated March 12, 2022 before he was able to guide the Tigers through that tournament. Will Wade is a guy who was very clearly breaking all of the rules. He was also a damn good basketball coach. Will Wade is also a guy who came from Clemson. Will Wade began his career in coaching as the student manager of the Clemson men's basketball team from 2002 to 2005. He was also a graduate assistant from 05 to 06 and promoted all the way up to director of basketball operations in 06 and 07 before he got hired as the Harvard men's basketball coach, where he turned in a top 25 recruiting class for Harvard before he left to go play, to go coach at VCU. Went to VCU under Shaka Smart, helped VCU to four consecutive postseason appearances, including a trip to the Final Four in 2011. VCU finished the 2012-13 season with a 27-9 overall mark, a number 23 final national ranking. They were one of only five teams nationally to win 27 or more games in each season from 09 to 13 while Wade was there. And in his 4 years as an assistant coach at VCU, they went 111-37, a 75% winning percentage, and had three straight trips to the NCAA tournament. Will Wade can coach his ass off. You are up against a guy that I believe, had he not violated all of the rules at LSU, would probably have been to the Final Four multiple times as a head coach at this point. That's problem number one. You've got the narrative against you here. You've got the narrative of Will Wade going up against the school that gave him his start, but never gave him the opportunity to move up in their own coaching ranks. Now, there's a lot of different reasons that happen. That's not really something that I'm going to look back at 2006 Clemson and go, oh, you screwed up. Because he was an unknown coaching prospect at that point. Like, they made the right decisions. They didn't do anything wrong. But that don't play great on TV. You know what plays great on TV? Will Wade's up against a school that didn't give him a chance to be a coach back when he was getting his start. Now he's got a chance for revenge two decades later. It's sexy on TV. Problem number one. Problem number two is that everything Clemson does, McNeese does too. Everything that Clemson does, McNeese does almost as well. It is a suffocating defense. It is a defense that is going to be in your face from the opening tip to the final whistle. This is a team that has held opponents to a 40.2% shooting percentage. They shoot 48% from the field. Clemson is allowed 43% shooting. McNeese State makes them at a 48% clip. Every year we have that 5-12 upset. Every year we have that matchup that happens on day number one sometime in the middle of the afternoon, and it starts the Cinderella run. Every single opening day we have that 5-12 matchup that everybody talks about it for the rest of the day, the rest of the week, into the weekend. That team goes on a nice little run to round three. Clemson, I'm telling you right now, you've done well. The ACC tournament, those final two games, were two of the worst games I've seen you play so far. Those ACC tournament games were the worst I've seen so far out of this team since the Georgia Tech loss. You have got to figure it out, because I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't, you will be that 5-12 upset. If you don't, you will become the team that gives the Cinderella run its kickstart. And you don't want to do that. When we come back, Mark Benetti, voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, will join us to talk a little local hockey. We'll do that next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. He played Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox. Well, a spinoff take on Francis Marion that did Mel Gibson in the movie The Patriot. Since that's what we were talking about with the voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, Mark Benetti, before we came on the air, Alonzo told Benetti he was shocked that I haven't yet joined like a Civil War reenactment group, to which I then informed them I'm joining a Revolutionary War reenactment group because I am, and this is true, Benetti, a loser, and that sounds awesome.
That's insanely debatable. I mean, the awesome part, great, you're not a loser, right? We all have our, you know, things that we want to do. What are those called? Hobbies. Jesus, Mark. Wow. I need more of this. I need more of this. Good grief.
Buddy, I'm on Celsius number 4. We're good. I get it. It's early. Mark Benetti, who has a legacy on this show now. It's the reason that I frustrate Lonzo with the number of times that I call people buddy at this point. Well done for adding to the lexicon of the show, by the way.
I'm glad that that is my mark on humanity. I'm honored.
I mean, it's a good one. You and I have had the discussion a number of times about the fact that hockey has its own, like, its own lingo, its own lexicon. It has its own vocabulary, and it has its own accent, I guess. Like the way the boys sound, and the fact that the boys say the boys, et cetera, et cetera. And over the 4 years that I have been around the franchise, and certainly in the last couple of years where I've become more engaged in day-to-day stuff with the team, it has crept up on me, including starting an uncountable number of sentences with the word buddy. And it turns out, Benetti dropped a buddy on me about 4 weeks ago, and it, for whatever reason, just stuck.
It's a shame that we can't go back to the tape on that. I would love to just bring that up as a historical moment. To the point of the lexicon, when my mom started learning a lot of these words, when I really started getting into this as a pro, her favorite term became a grocery stick, which is a player on the bench that has no intention of being put into the game, and he separates the forward from the defense like he is a grocery stick. So that is her favorite term out of all of them.
Well, the buddy thing, when he used it, was very derogatory. So, I mean, when you use it, I'm sure it's endearing.
I've
when
tried.
He used it, it was a talking down moment.
I've tried and to so, explain, you know. Mark Benetti, that buddy's kind of like the F word. It's a very versatile word. You can use it positively, negatively. You can use it for emphasis. You can use it to slide in like a little jab at somebody. Buddy has a lot of weight to it.
It's very reflexive, believe it or not. It is very reflexive. It's kind of a jack of all trades of a word. And, you know, there's moments where it's like, buddy, great to see you, or buddy, really? And it's, you know, completely changed its complexion.
That's it.
Yeah, the second one is one I get a lot.
So, I mean, I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying it's not every time. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, Buddy. It's Mark Benetti joining us here on the show. What's up, fella? How we doing after a very long handful of days for the Bits?
It was pretty wild. You go from a 7-game road trip to 3-3 at home with 3 promos because we were gone for 7 games again, so you had to make up for lost time. But, you know, I think we learned a lot of great things about our team, especially as we get to the final stretch here of the season. You take 3 points out of 6 against the number 2 team in the Western Conference and just so happens to be the defending Western Conference champion in this league. You know, I hated, unfortunately, how Sunday's game turned out, because saying 5 points out of 6 against a team of that caliber is obviously better than 3 points out of 6. But nonetheless, it was a pretty good weekend of hockey for the most part. And, you know, seeing a brand new team from the complete opposite side of the league doesn't really happen often in the ECHL. So it was really cool to see that. Got to catch up with an old friend and Kansas City assistant coach Riley Wesolowski, who I worked with the first 6 years out of my 8 in Rapid City. He was the captain of the Rush. His number got retired when he became the assistant coach of Kansas City. So it really, really neat to have that small world moment in hockey where, you know, a guy that you worked with almost a decade's right there, and, you know, you get to take in a new team too.
I think one of my favorite things, just do another pat on the back to hockey. I was over in New Orleans this past week and got a chance to go home and see the friends and the family. And I was talking about working for the Rabbits as the in-arena host and all that with a friend of mine, with a cousin of mine who's kind of getting into hockey via proxy, right? We're like watching my stuff at the games and all that. And we were going through some of the Four Nations face-off stuff, the USA-Canada match, and there's an angle from one of the games where, like, fight number three in those first 9 seconds from across the rink, you see a couple of the guys on Team USA and Canada, and they're, like, standing there with arms around each other's shoulders and, like, patting each other. It is the only sport where two guys will try to knock each other's teeth out of their heads, and their teammates are like, what a fight, eh? Like, it's the best.
Oh, yeah, bud.
There it is.
What a tilt, hey, bud. It's awesome. It's great. You know, and quite honestly, yes, everybody will say there's an entertainment aspect to the fighting, but there is such a much deeper purpose to actually getting in scraps like that. In a moment like that, especially USA-Canada, you're setting a tone and you're sending a message, right, that this is going to be a 12-round prize fight, and if you're going to win, great, you've got to wear ice bags at the end of it because that's how brutal the game was in such a head-to-head rivalry. The other reason is because it's a police force for what referees may or may not do over the course of 60 minutes. And so to prevent liberties from being taken against your star players and teammates, that's where you've got to step in and really make something happen with it.
Mark Benetti joining us here on the show. All right, let's get caught up on where we've been and where we're going for the boys. We talked a little bit about that 7-game roadie. Didn't exactly go the way you wanted. There were flashes of good hockey. So the Bits come back for the weekend. 3 games in 3 days. They take the first one 4-1. They drop game 2 by a goal. They drop game 3-2, including a late one. And I think you kind of hit on a second ago, but I'd love for you to kind of go off and emphasize a little bit. This is a damn good Kansas City team that the boys went toe-to-toe with for a weekend, and not just a good team, but a team that it's the first time they've seen that KC logo across the ice in a handful of years now. So a team they had zero familiarity with outside of looking at tape. Could you give me kind of an overall grade and overall take from a 1-2 weekend that included a couple of heartbreakers?
I would honestly, I'd give the weekend a B because it could have, again, depending on how Sunday finishes out, could have been so much better for the team, right? Sunday was a very disjointed game. And for a number of reasons, you're at the end of 3-3 to begin with. For the Swamp Rabbits, you're at the end of 4-5 that included brief travel up the road, but it was in North Charleston, and that was a game that didn't go the way of the Swamp Rabbits. So there's a couple of arguments you can make there on some slightly added fatigue. But, you know, you get to the end of 4 games in 5 nights. You play pretty solid hockey offensively game 1. Game 2, you play much more calculated, much more structured. I honestly think should have earned the second point there. They played well enough to earn the second point. But the third game between the Mavericks and the Swamp Rabbits, there was no rhythm. There were 11 combined power plays in the game. That is 22 minutes maximum of odd man hockey. A couple of bouts of 4-on-4 in there. There's 8 goals in the game. Half of them came on the power play. One was a fluke empty netter against the Swamp Rabbits. That happened in the first period. And I think it was 53 or 55 combined shots on net in the final game. So there wasn't really much going for either side. Nobody really took care of the neutral zone either. So it was a really odd anchor game. But, you know, again, sometimes they don't ask how you win. They ask if you did. Kansas City got to answer that question, unfortunately, for the Swamp Rabbits. But even if the Swamp Rabbits come out with 5 out of 6 points, that's a heck of a weekend against, like you said, a very top team. So I think the team learned adjustments within a series against a brand new opponent. You know, the coaches do a phenomenal job of the due diligence in preparing with film and preparing statistically and analyzing certain trends and this and that. But it's completely different when you have live ammunition. So for Coach Mountain and Coach Dowda, it's a huge test to, okay, game 1 shows your preparation. Game 2 shows how can you finagle things within the series? And then game 3 is where's the gut check? Where's the will? How do you get that rubber match, so to speak? And so I think we saw a lot of things in that series. But ultimately, I think the Swamp Rabbits played well enough to take 5 out of 6 points. But unfortunately, they couldn't.
So talk to me a little bit about this series, because I know, especially now as we are getting into the back third of the season, we're getting to the point where points are at a premium, even when you are playing top-notch competition from across the entire ECHL. What is, if anything, do you think the lesson, the number one or two lessons that this team will take with another home game tonight against a very good Florida Everblades team on the road Friday night, going to play again against the Stingrays in South Carolina? What do you want to see this Swamp Rabbits team take away from a tough, a battle-tested weekend and put against a couple of divisional rivals over the next two?
Protect the neutral zone. Because Kansas City was a lightning fast team. They came out the first 5 minutes of Friday night swinging, and the Swamp Rabbits didn't give anything up, thankfully, but that was an onslaught. And I think despite the preparation of the team, Coach Mountain's even said it himself, I think the speed of Kansas City kind of caught them by surprise a bit. And Jacob Ingham had a night, 50 saves on 51 shots and what ended up being his 100th professional game. That's a career high for him, a heck of a milestone, well celebrated, and a win well earned. But then you saw that change in game two. The Swamp Rabbits suffocated neutral ice, and anything that Kansas City earned was either on the power play or was either on a breakdown. And so, you know, I think for the Swamp Rabbits, they found out when they protect the neutral zone, when they are more defensively sound with their gap, when the play is underneath them, not necessarily over the top of them, the good things are going to at least be in position to come for them. So you're against a Florida team that's very structured, very responsible. They're also a brilliant skating team. So neutral ice is key there. You can't allow odd mans. South Carolina, every time in North Charleston, has found a way to burn you in neutral ice. So you have to continue to exercise the principles of what you've learned against this great team in the neutral third. And then when it comes to Savannah, that's another great transition team who tries to score every goal, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 3-on-1. So, you know, it's especially that lesson is important for the young players too, the young defensemen, the likes of a Tristan DeYoung, who's now almost a dozen games into his pro career, Dustin Garagach, who's 7 in, Connor Hutchison, who played his second pro game in his home debut on Sunday in the St. Patrick's Day game. So you've got three rookie defensemen who got thrown under the fire a couple of weeks ago or within the last 2 weeks in their pro careers. It's a huge lesson of when the play's in front of you, obviously you're in a better chance to defend it.
Talk to me a little bit about stamina for a hockey team at this point in the season. Again, you're kind of at clutch time. There's just not much room for margin of error at this point, but you've got a couple of sloppy games there with, like you said, a lot of penalty minutes, a lot of minutes spent on the PK. Is that going to be a point of emphasis for Kyle Mountain and the gang to get cleaned up? Because if you're going to drop points moving forward, it just needs to be because the other team beat you, not because you handed them away. Is that, do you think, kind of going to be a point of emphasis for the Rabbits this week?
Well, discipline's always going to be a point of emphasis. I mean, the Swamp Rabbits, if memory serves me correctly, went on the penalty kill 13 times in three games. Six of them came in game one, four of them in the third period. So discipline has to always be a key no matter what. And that used to be the bread and butter of this team. It took them about 12 games into the season to get more than three penalty kills appearances in a contest. It was absolutely insane how well disciplined the team was in the first month and a half of the year. So that's always going to be an emphasis, no matter what, with this team. So that's an emphasis there. And then I think 5-on-5 offense needs to be something the team needs to get back to. The power plays had phenomenal success. They went 30-something percent in these last three games. You look at game one, they went 2-for-3. Game two, they went they went 2-for-4 in game one, 1-for-3 in game two, and 2-for-7 in game three. So, I mean, that's a 38.6% scoring clip, I think, if I did the math right. I mean, five power play goals in three games is insane. But 5-on-5 has got to be able to pull their weight. You can't always rely on the power play, no matter how red hot it is. So I think special teams and 5-on-5 is your key. You stay out of the box, continue your excellence on the power play. But then the way that the game is meant to be played, 5-on-5, is the most important way. You've got to find a way to score goals.
Mark Benetti, voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. One or two more for you before we let you go, Mark. The next thing I really wanted to hit on as we are kind of looking for the silver linings here, I think we've got to talk about the goaltending, because defense has given up, unfortunately, higher quantities of shots than we'd like. But you had Dryden McKay, who had such a heater that Ontario called him up. They send Jacob Inge back down to us. He goes 50 saves on 51 shots, which was impressive. If there is a highlight for this team this year, it has been the fact that the boys between the pipes, and I will simply say netminders so I don't call them by the wrong name, Mark Benetti, have been good for this team. I think it's now just a matter of let's get those last three guys ahead of them kind of on that same page, and let's start pushing the puck back the other way a little bit more regularly.
Yeah, Jacob Bingham, again, he's certainly earned it Friday, you know, and to hear his story too. I mean, the guy had two season-ending surgeries very early in his career, one on his leg, one on his back, missed a whole season because of the latter one, and battled his way not only back to earning an NHL contract again with the LA Kings last season, but then to get to 100 games in 5 years. He even joked with me, he said, wow, it took me 5 years to get that far. But, you know, very well earned on his part, 50 saves on 51 shots. And again, he played well enough on Sunday to help the team in front of him. If the game on both sides wasn't so disjointed with the special teams appearances, both for and against the Swamp Rabbits, or just some fluky transition plays too, maybe you're talking a different story. Pierce Charleston made his pro debut on Saturday, and he did what every goaltender is expected to do, and he gave the team a chance to win. 21 saves on 24 shots, and unfortunately, the puck bounced off the defender the wrong way in overtime. Otherwise, that guy celebrating a win that he'll never forget because it's his first one as a pro. Colby Hay was very patient this whole year. He finally started to string together starts. He had started 5 out of 8 at one point. In his first two starts, he gets 3 out of 4 points for the team, including his first pro win against Atlanta on February 23rd. And then, like you said, Dryden McKay was the workhorse. He had gotten to a point before his call-up where he had started 8 out of 10 games and had a dozen wins on the season. He still led the Swamp Rabbits in that category for so long throughout this campaign. So, you know, the goaltending has, for the most part this season, been there. It's everything else that's really needed to build the consistency around. But you've got to really tip your cap to the last line of defense for this team, because no matter the situation, even good, bad, or indifferent, they've been able to try and put the team in a chance to win.
Mark Bonetti is the voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. The Bunnies back in action this evening. A little Wednesday night midweek hockey taking on the Everblades. They'll be on the road Friday against South Carolina, back home to take on the Savannah Ghost Pirates on Sunday. Bonetti, kind enough to join us on Wednesdays at 8:40 to talk a little local puck stick. Appreciate you, big dog. You absolute icon of stage and screen.
Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it. You know, like you said, time's of the essence here. The Swamp Rabbits elimination number, unfortunately, 1. So any loss tonight or any Orlando point gained in their game this evening, that'll be the end of it. So, you know, it's really, really, really crunch time right now. Should be a fun game tonight.
Should be a fun game. Let's get the well packed. Make a little noise for the boys. Bonetti on the call, as always, my man. Thank you, big dog. Talk to you this evening, as a matter of fact.
You got it.
My guy. Mark Bonetti, voice of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. Lonzo. It's so good. It works at everything. Watch this. Watch this. Buddy, Lonzo Sports Flash.
I don't know. Transition could have been better. It could have been. The first tournament win in the 2025 NCAA Championship Tournament belongs to Alabama State, who hit a game-winning layup with 0.7 seconds left to knock off St. Francis 70-68. The Hornets had 16 from Amar Knox, 11 from TJ Madlock, and 10 from CJ Hines in the win. Alabama State will move on to play number one overall Auburn in the first round. North Carolina was one of the most criticized tournament bid earners in recent memory, but added to their argument with the first 4 win over San Diego State. It's hard to read. It really is. 95-68, RGA Davis led all scorers with 26, followed by up by Seth Trimble, 16 and a dozen from Van Allen Lubin. UNC will play Ole Miss in round 1. Tune in tonight at 7:30 as Furman Paladins take on North Texas in the first round of the NIT tournament.